Early Breakfast on Cape Talk, your number one news and talk station.
A debate will take place in Johannesburg today, the 21st of March, as we commemorate the 58th anniversary of the Sharpeville massacre. After a day of demonstrations against past laws, a crowd of about 5,000 to 7,000 protesters went to the Sharpeville police station on the 21st of March 1960, offering themselves up for arrest for not carrying their passports. The South African police subsequently opened fire on the crowd, killing 69 people. The debate is far removed from the events of that day, but instead has focused on the issues we face today. The debate that's taking place in Johannesburg is, did Mandela's government set us up for failure? The panelists that will be on the discussion are, Karima Brown, political journalist and editor, Selo Hatang, CEO of Nelson Mandela Foundation, Siyuzwe Mpofu, Walsh author, musician and activist, and moderated by renowned radio personality Eusebius Makeza, and Lebohang Peko, senior research fellow and political economist at Trade Collective. Lebohang, it's a question that I think future generations will still be asking. It's a question that we've also come to ask as many, as many of us as South Africans. Did Nelson Mandela's government set us up for failure?
Well, his government, that's the one thing. I think the whole idea of capture, sellout, failure precedes 1994. And we need to really be systematic in the way that we assess this. So if we go back to even the Cape Town Charter 1955, which was really the point of departure between what was then the ANC Youth League, the Africanist bloc, and the African National Congress, the land question, the Freedom Charter in Cape Town, which was signed, was then really the breaking point. It was the Youth League had been running a defiance campaign, which really spoke about a land restitution. In fact, not only restitution, but really repossession of land. And it was felt that the older generation or the rest of the ANC were really dragging their feet on this. And I think that even at that stage, there was a faction who were viewed as the moderates, of which Nelson Mandela would have been one of them, and another faction which was viewed as the more radical, of which Robert Sobukwe would have been viewed as that faction. And I think that the whole idea of disemboweling the political nature of the colonial struggle began even then. And I think also then it then began to reframe this question as a racial question rather than as a colonial question. So the idea of, you know, having sell out began long before Mr. Mandela and others were even in government. And it wasn't, there's an architecture of really denuding liberation question in South Africa of meaning, and also trying to dislocate it to other political and imperial questions across the African continent. So by the time then, of course, we get to 1961, when the Sharpeville massacre occurred, and the concurrent massacre at Langa in Cape Town, also organized by the Pan-Africanist Congress at the helm of Ndate Sobukwe, you already have clear factions in line, which is why when the banning took place, the ANC, including Mr. Mandela's ANC, were the first to call for the banning of only the PAC, not the ANC. They refused to participate in this defiance campaign. They refused to participate in this whole, in this campaign, in this encounter, claiming that it had no possible prospect of failure. So I think the architecture of selling out begins a long time before 1994, even before Mr. Mandela and the ANC were in government. It's only after a few days when this, of course, the momentum, the moment of this had become so, had ignited global power, had ignited global attention, and had really began to internationalize the apartheid struggle in a way that it had not been internationalized before. The South African colonial question had not been internationalized before. And this is what the Sharpeville massacre and Langa gave to the world, was a sense in which this was a very important issue. So it was only then that a few days later, people like Mr. Mandela, Chief Albert Luthuli and others then also went to burn their passbooks, having put out the press release that said that it could not fail, that it was bound to fail, in fact.
Now that we're here and we're asking these questions, Lebohang, what have we learnt as a society from past atrocities like the Sharpeville massacre? And I dare even ask, have we learnt anything from such instances?
Who's we? I mean, if you talk about we as a South African nation, I think that there's a horrible ahistorical amnesia that we seem to reside in, which is why even calling it the Human Rights Day, I think, is incredibly offensive. I think that it's yet another dilution of a political moment. And so I think if you're talking about the South African context, we need to re-remember and recontextualize this moment. If you talk about internationally, I think that several people have managed, across the world, I have colleagues and friends and so on, who are people in the Black Lives Matter movement, people among the Dalit movement in Southeast Asia, who hold up this moment as a very critical key one in their own discourse setting, in their own political formation, in their own understanding of imperial power and resistance.
And to you listening at home, a very quick reminder that a debate will take place in Johannesburg today, the 21st of March, as we commemorate the 58th anniversary of the Sharpeville massacre. So it will be a panel, and the topic for today's debate taking place in Johannesburg is, did Mandela's government set us up for failure? And Lebohang, thank you once again. Getting back to you, and we talk about, and I will specify now that we talk about the South African youth of today. Do you find that there is an interest in the history of Human Rights Day and why we commemorate it each year?
Yeah, so as I said before, I object to it, the nomenclature of Human Rights Day. Number one, I think it's dehistoricized, but number two, I think because of that, the interest might be there, but I think that like many moments in South Africa, including June 16th, the Soweto uprising, now dumbed down to Youth Day, I do feel that we're not getting the correct context. So even if there's an interest, instead of talking about the substantive questions of imperialism, global power, global capital, and the meaning that these occasions have, we start talking about really prosaic but now things like what Penny Sparrow, and then things that are just symptoms of much deeper issues, much deeper sicknesses, much deeper social, political, economic malaise. So I think that I'm happy that there seems to be a generation of people who are reading, writing, inquiring more deeply. But I have to say that I am going to continue to object to it being called Human Rights Day, because I think that that's part of the depoliticization and the dumbing down of a very important historical encounter.
And we continue in South Africa right now. We find ourselves in the midst of one of the most interesting, if I can put it in such a manner, land debates that we've ever faced as a country. Coming from here, and once again, learning from some of the descriptions that you've just given us today, is there a way forward where as a country we can sit and move forward with the same understanding?
Same understanding of what?
In terms of why we need land why we need the expropriation of land.
Well, the argument was never expropriation of land. So I think, again, we need to thank Nkateko Sobukwe and others for giving us a clear context many years ago on what land is. It was really about land repossession, not expropriation. And I think that at the time, people like him were called radicals, they were called firebrands. They were labeled racist and insulted for many years across party political lines, and of course, including by the settler colonialist regime. So I think that we need to be very clear what we're talking about. So we're talking about the repossession of land and land as inviolable to the African people in this country. And then as much as it's a good thing that it's on the agenda, I think that there's no real plan. I don't see that there's a real plan for it. I think it is very cheap political vote gathering. And pending that, it will continue to feel like a gimmick, a political gimmick ahead of election. I think the ANC would have had the courtesy and the integrity to concede that after insulting the Pan-Africanist Congress, AZAPO, and the Africanist bloc for many decades, that they indeed have gotten it wrong. Are they then going to go back and review the Freedom Charter, which clearly states that the land belongs to anybody and everybody who lives in it? Now what they are saying is that, no, we were wrong. It doesn't belong to everybody. It does belong to the African people. So when are they going to actually then state that basis of their being, the basis of their form of struggle was actually wrong, and has and rather than having delegitimized many other forms of struggle from other political movements for many years. So I think that we, again, need to take this back to context, take it back to history, and be very clear that the whole notion of expropriation without compensation is, I think, in my opinion, in as much as that it's useful, that it speaks to the issue of land, I'm not sure that it speaks to it appropriately or in the way that it was intended.
That was Lebohang Pheko, Senior Research Fellow and Political Economist at Trade Collective, talking about the debate that will be taking place in Johannesburg today, the 21st of March, as we commemorate the 58th anniversary of the Sharpeville Massacre.